Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Dear readers, friends, and neighbors, during these challenging and trying times, it is important that we at Odessa American remind you of our commitment to keeping you, our neighbors, friends, and fellow citizens, informed on how COVID-19 is impacting daily life in our local communities. Our team of journalists are working around the clock to provide you with up-to-the-minute news on a daily basis, reporting information that is important to you and your loved ones, and highlighting the extraordinary people doing extraordinary things during this unprecedented experience. AIM Media, the parent company of the OA, is taking steps in an effort to do our part to slow the spread of the coronavirus and protect employees and customers while continuing to bring you the information you need to help navigate through this ordeal. First, to ensure the health and safety of our employees, where possible, we have offered staff the opportunity to work remotely. We have also increased sanitation practices throughout our newsrooms, offices, production sites, and with product deliveries. Additionally, our lobby will be closed to the public until further notice. Advertisers, customers, and readers can call us with any questions at 432-337-7314. At this time, we will continue to deliver your newspaper and provide essential news to our community. The World Health Organization states the risk of catching the virus that causes COVID-19 from packages, including newspapers, that have been moved, traveled, and exposed to different conditions and temperature is low. However, those who handle our printed products are taking precautionary measures. Second, while the home delivery and single copy sales of our printed publications will continue to remain available, we will provide the online version of our publication free to the public. During this crisis, we have removed the paywall for our daily digital replica newspaper, E-Edition. This option is available to subscribers and non-subscribers. This important step represents part of our effort to keep you informed during these uncertain and rapidly changing times. To access the e-editions, visit our website, myoaoa.com, and enter your email address to create an account. You will then be able to sign in to access the publication at no cost. We encourage you to share this option with family members, friends, and neighbors. If you would like to subscribe, call 432-337-7314. Third, we invite you to partner with AIM Media to help share local information and stories by calling or emailing story ideas, acts of kindness within our community, or other aspects of how COVID-19 may be impacting our region. Let's work together to disseminate information and support our community. To share your ideas and news tips, please email us at ldennis@oaoa.com. That's ldennis@oaoa.com. While each of us bears the burden COVID-19 has created, the Odessa American is here to bear it with you. To that end, we pledge to remain your most trusted source for news and will continue to inspire unity and promote the common good as we continue to work together. Please know that as the situation changes, seemingly minute by minute, you are foremost in our minds as we disseminate information to you and to the local community during this rapidly changing situation. Thank you for your continued support of local journalism. It's never been more important than now. Stay positive, healthy, and strong. Patrick S. Canty, Odessa American Publisher. AIM Media, Texas. On the net, OAOA.com. Quick hits. COVID-19 cases. The Texas Tribune website offers updated numbers on cases of COVID-19, coronavirus, confirmed cases in Texas. As of 7 p.m. Monday, it showed 10,055 tested statewide, and there were total Texas positive cases, 352, total Texas deaths, 8. Midland County had 1, Crane County had 1, Dallas County had 33. There were no reported confirmed cases in Ector, although a Saturday news release from the city of Odessa indicated only 15 residents have even been tested. Many Texas cities and counties have issued shelter-in-place orders, including Waco, Dallas, Hidalgo County, and others. In the United States, the CDC.gov site showed 33,404 total cases and 400 deaths as of 7 p.m. Monday. That was with all 50 states and the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and U.S. Virgin Islands reporting. The data includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. Visit the Texas site at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at https://www.cdc.gov/coronavirus/2019ncov/cases-n-us.html. Other corona news. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, will serve lunch and carry-out trays for seniors 60 and older. Reservations are required by 9 a.m. Call 432-337-5281. Pick up from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the center. The West Texas Food Bank is currently taking donations to purchase all the products needed for their pantry box. Each box costs around $20. Donate to Stock the Pantry at tinyurl.com/W3PV5TY. Meals on Wheels is in need of help with small coolers, plastic bags, and volunteers for drivers. Items can be dropped off at 1314 East 5th Street. For more information on volunteering or to donate, call 432-333-6451. Visit tinyurl.com/VFZ3RBL. Harmony Science Academy, 2755 North Grandview Avenue, is offering free lunch and breakfast for all children under the age of 18 in the community from 11 a.m. to noon weekdays. Call 432-363-6000 or visit tinyurl.com/VLVG7PR. SOB Ordinance on Consent Agenda. Utility Policy Ideas Stemmed from Texas Vehicle Registration by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council will put forward a second and final vote to amend a current sexually oriented business ordinance on Tuesday that would prevent sexually oriented business employees from renewing or applying for their SOB license if they are late on their Odessa utility bill. SOB employees include dancers, bouncers, cooks, and managers at clubs, as well as those businesses that sell sexual content, like pornography. After City Council passed the first vote to amend a current Senior Assistant Attorney Dan Jones said in an email on March 13th that the idea for the utility policy was created to combat human trafficking, but others disapproved that it would. Jones wrote that the policy stemmed from an idea that the Texas Vehicle Registration uses. In Texas, you need automobile insurance and a passing vehicle inspection before the county tax assessor collector will give you a tag, and each year thereafter a vehicle registration. Every year this must be done, otherwise no sticker. That's how the utilities policy all started in my head, he said. Jones's email stated that the utilities policy has a purpose, but some council members disagree with that purpose. At-large Councilmember Peggy Dean said that she will ask for the SOB ordinance changes to be pulled from the consent agenda, and so did District 4 Councilmember Tom Sprawls. Both previously voted against the ordinance during the March 10th council meeting. The ordinance passed its first approval in a 4-2 vote, with Mayor Turner being one of those four, as Malcolm Hamilton was absent. On March 17th, Dean said that she disagreed with the ordinance's utilities policy, especially in the current times where many people might be unable to pay their water bill after being laid off or have had their hours cut due to the coronavirus. I'm going to ask for it to come off the consent agenda, she said. That's just not right. I don't really understand how the past due water bills help stop human trafficking. That makes no sense to me. She mentioned that if anybody had a past due water bill, then they would be 18, and what was said in the council meeting was that the policy would help us find out who is underage. Well, it wouldn't. A 16-year-old wouldn't have a water bill, she said. It just doesn't make sense to me. I respect and appreciate the opinion of all of the council members. I just believe it is very invasive and way too far-reaching. Dean said that she will ask for that ordinance change to come off the consent agenda so council members can discuss it more. SOB workers also must already be 18 years old or older to receive a SOB license. District 4 Councilmember Sprouse's point of view hasn't changed from the last meeting, and he said that it also wouldn't be helpful. He said that it is the piling of laws that doesn't make sense and just puts more work on city workers. During the meeting, he said that he didn't see how the change regarding the utilities policy would help human trafficking. For now, the SOB ordinance is on the consent agenda, which can be voted on without being discussed. The City Council will also discuss a public hearing to approve the resolution extending the mayor's declaration of local disaster, which was declared on March 18th. Other action includes consent agenda. These items have been previously discussed and can be approved in one motion, unless a council member asks for separate consideration of an item. Consider approval of City Council minutes, March 10th, 2020. Consider approval of City Council work session minutes, March 17th, 2020. Consider approval of the request by MCM Properties Limited and MCM Properties 2 LLC owners to rezone from Light Commercial Drill Reservation, LCDR, to Light Commercial LC, approximately 13.5 acres, four drill sites in Section 12, Block 42, T2S, T and PRR County Survey, Odessa, Ector County, Texas, northeast of the intersection of Tanglewood Lane and East 42nd Street. Ordinance, second and final approval. consider approval of the rezone request by Leco Properties, owner LCA, agent from Special Dwelling District Drill Reservation, SPDDR, to Special Dwelling District, SPD, on Lot 8, Block 14, Desert Ridge, Second Filing, Phase 3, southeast of the intersection of Paladura Drive and Boise Drive, Ordinance Second and Final Approval. Consider approval of the request by Wine Glass Holdings, LLC, owner, for original zoning of Light Industrial, LI, on 24.29-acre tract in Section 40, Block 42, T2S, T&P Railway Company, southeast of the intersection of West Interstate 20 and South County Road West. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider amending the existing Odessa City Code, Chapter 4, Business Regulations, Article 4 to 5, Sexually Oriented Businesses. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider authorizing the City of Odessa Police Department to accept Texas Law Enforcement Officer Standards Education Funds, LEOSE, for $10,741.53. Resolution. Public hearing. Open a public hearing to consider approval of the request by Tommy Pugh, owner, Odessa Pugh DTP, LLC, option E, John Cowan and Associates, agent, for annexation and original zoning of Planned Development Retail 1, PDR 1, on an approximately 3-acre tract in Section 4, Block 41, T2S, T&P Railway Company, Survey, Ector County, Texas, southeast of the intersection of LaGow Lane and Faudry Road. Ordinance, first approval. Consider authorizing a professional services agreement with Kimley Horn and Associates Incorporated and appropriate funds for the development of an impact fee study related to roadway, water, and wastewater impact fees for $181,000. Discuss and approve the resolution extending the mayor's declaration of local disaster declared on March 18, 2020. Appointment of boards. Citizen comments on non-agenda items. Adjourn. Jail running low on masks. Sheriff says alternates are being talked about. By Royal McGregor. RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. As of Monday morning, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said during a phone interview, one item the Ector County Law Enforcement Center is lacking are masks. Griffiths said the jail hasn't run out of masks, but it has a limited amount right now. The Ector County Sheriff explained more masks have been ordered, but he doesn't know when those will arrive, as many jails and hospitals around the nation are in search of masks due to the coronavirus pandemic. We've had several hundred on order, and we just ordered another 650, Griffiths said. We have no idea when we will receive all that stuff, because there's such a shortage throughout the country right now. Griffiths said plans have already started for mask substitutes. Throughout the last 2 weeks, Griffiths said he has echoed the importance of staying safe to his staff. Griffiths said employees have been asked to clean their own areas, which was a job previously held by inmates. We got recommendations from the Texas Commission on Jail Standards on what our protocol should be and what our standards should be at this day in time, he said. We are reiterating good hygiene. In our business, we have to go hands-on at times. That's the business that we are in. We are reiterating that we need to be safe and keep a safe distance if possible. The jail is reportedly stocked on disposable gloves, hand sanitizer, and toilet paper. Griffiths said the jail goes through 24 cases of toilet paper every week. our toilet paper is pretty good right now and have another source that we can reach out to if we need some more, he said. We aren't hoarding, but we use like 24 cases a week. Jails around the country have released prisoners or limited the number of prisoners due to the outbreak. Griffiths said the jail will continue to house inmates who commit crimes in Ector County. Griffiths said another precaution being taken is everyone who comes to the sheriff's office is being screened with a remote thermometer. We are screening each and every person that comes into the facility with a handheld thermometer, Griffiths said. We can test their temperature from a distance. Court views coronavirus crisis. Possible emergency management scenario discussed today. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will discuss the COVID-19 pandemic and decide what action they may take in response to it. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childress said Monday that he and Judge Debbie Hayes had been consulting with County Emergency Manager Ricky George, Health Department Director Brandy Garcia, and others, considering if they should declare a local disaster and proceed with establishing an emergency operations center, explaining that an EOC would be spread out in several locations, Childress said. The meeting will be mostly an update on what we have done and what we will need to do if we get a known case of coronavirus in the county. We have structured an organizational chart to meet all the U.S. Centers for Disease Control guidelines. It's an ever-changing atmosphere that we're living in right now, and we are not sure what will come out of it, Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said. Hayes is on the verge of declaring a disaster like the cities of Odessa and Midland have done. But she doesn't want to jump the gun because we haven't had any cases yet, Shelton said. We've never been through this before, so we really don't know what to do. We need to have faith in the system and do what our federal, state, and local officials have told us to do with social distancing and washing our hands. Shelton noted that Childress is the court's emergency management expert because he is a former assistant chief of the Odessa Fire and Rescue Department. Another 10 a.m. business at the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, the court will review an immunization contract with the Texas Department of State Health Services and consider Sheriff Mike Griffith's proposals to hire nurses and part-time nurses for the detention center and approve the assignment of deputies certified by the Texas Commission on Jail Standards to assist in filling open positions at the detention center. The court will also review adding $6,500 to the elections fund for postage, consider spending $23,000 for improvements and construction for the jail expansion, review the county's comprehensive annual financial report, hold a public hearing on the Republic Services Landfill Company's tax-exempt bond financing, consider a projects and departmental presentation report from the Building Maintenance Department, accept $2,500 from Jamie Tisdale and Wilson's Corner for environmental enforcement, accept the donation of two Model 2002 horse trailers from former Sheriff Mark Donaldson for the Sheriff's Office, consider adding the Humane Society of Odessa to the Juror's Donation Fund list, discuss enrolling county employees in the Texas Association of Counties cybersecurity course, review a two-week grant for the Click It or Ticket program to encourage motorists' use of seat belts, consider renewing the Federal Aviation Administration's lease at Schlemmer Field Airport, discuss an interlocal cooperation agreement for the Teen Court program with ECISD and the City of Odessa. Hello, this is Still Kay reading the Odessa American for March 24th, 2020. OAOA.com. Superintendent to report on response to coronavirus. OA News at OAOA.com. Edgar County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray will report on the district's response to COVID-19 during the regular Board of Trustees meeting set for 6 p.m. today. It will be held in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The district has gone to remote learning as the coronavirus pandemic continues. ECISD discontinued classes in school as of March 16th. Governor Greg Abbott has ordered schools closed until April 3rd. Some of the other items on the agenda are a special presentation of Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Howard being accepted to the National Superintendent's Academy, discussion of and request for approval of a memorandum of understanding between the ECISD School Nutrition Department and the West Texas Food Bank, discussion of and request for approval of purchases over $50,000, discussion of and request for approval of a local policy on admissions, intra-district transfers, and classroom assignments, discussion of and request for approval of a resolution for emergency purchases, a report on PSAT 2019 participation and results, request for approval of 2020 through 2021 special calendars. UTPB, developing way to treat produced water. By Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Led by its dean, George Nana, University of Texas Permian Basin's College of Engineering has filed a U.S. patent application for technology to treat produced water. The process can take a year and a half to 2 years. The technology is aimed at using solar energy for filtration of produced water, so it will be energy efficient in the sense that we will use solar collectors to harvest the solar energy and irradiate it on the produced water so that it can evaporate, Nana said. When it evaporates, we collect those vapors and it becomes clean water. Produced water is oil field water that contains a number of constituents that can be anything from dissolved solids to organic and inorganic materials. It can also contain bacteria, Nana said. Nana has been working on getting a patent for the device since before he came to UTPB. Previously, he was head of the mechanical and civil engineering departments at Purdue University Northwest in Hammond, Indiana. He arrived at UTPB in 2018. We write the patent, technically, then you submit it to the legal team, then they put it in this legal language, Nana said. He added that the legal team he's referring to is from Purdue University Northwest. Currently, it's at the lab scale, but the idea is that we are now in a position to take it to a pilot scale where it can be tested in the field. And if successful, then the next step will be to have it at a larger scale. So the process typically is you do the lab scale experiment, then you do the pilot scale, then you go to full scale, Nana said. He has been through the patent process before. We were about to go through the lab scale, then we ran the pilot scale in one of the facilities in Northwest Indiana. Then from there, it was up to the company to take it to commercial stage, he said. In this case, if we finish the pilot scale and the result is promising, then we can commercialize it. It has potential to be utilized in other wastewater treatment facilities, Nana said. After it got through the device, the water can be reused for hydraulic fracturing, municipal use, or for irrigation. That will save you the fresh water. So even if you're using it for those other purposes, hydraulic fracturing, or if you're using for municipal and irrigation that frees up the fresh water you use for that purpose, so that you have surplus of fresh water, Nana said. Although the device is going through the patent process, Nana said work to fine-tune it and develop it and test it at a larger scale is. In fact, in our lab, we have a scanning electron microscopy. So this scanning electron microscopy also has an energy dispersion spectrometer. So for short, it's called SEMEDS, SEM/EDS. This equipment is used for a characterization of the produced water. If you use it, it has the capability of giving you information about the elemental composition of the produced water, telling you what is in that water. This can be done by basically shooting electron beams on that sample, and at the specific wavelength of that element, you'll be able to get information on the mass fraction or atomic fraction. That means the percentage of the mass of the element that is contained within the entire sample. In the lab, we have equipment that is called TOC, total organic carbon. This equipment can give us information about the hydrocarbons, so it can give us information on organic and inorganic carbons that is contained within the water samples. The other equipment that is available to us is called the inductively coupled plasma optical emissive spectroscopy. It's ICP-OES for short. We use it to determine the concentration of cations in the water samples. It can measure the concentration of these cations up to parts per million or parts per billion. Those ions are like heavy metals, Nana said. And it can give information on other elements as well. Bibian Agbuji, a postdoctoral researcher at UTPB, has her doctorate in computer science. She has a team of 6 students working on the project. Agbuji said the project has been very interesting and educational for her. My background is originally computer science, and being able to bring computer science into engineering has been a very insightful experience, Agbuji said. This is her first involvement with produced water research. In the past, I had worked in the oil and gas company, but not specifically for water or produced water, so I started my water journey, I would say in July last year. It's a fairly new experience for me, she added. Nana described the work Agbuji and the students are doing as water data intelligence. What that is she's looking at the data, the constituents of produced water within the Permian Basin. What she and her group have done is look at about 23 million data points, and they use the statistical method to reduce that 23 million data points to 3 million data points, focusing specifically on the Permian Basin. They went further to look at that 3 million data points in each county within the Permian Basin, Nana said. He added that her team was able to create color coding of all the counties in the basin and identify the concentration of total dissolved solids in each of the counties. This is the first time this type of detailed work has been done, he said. Agbuji said 2 of takeaways from her research so far have been the wide range of constituents for various contaminants in the water and the lack of literature in terms of produced water in the Permian and the need to close the knowledge gap by providing more information in terms of data required for the oil and gas industry. The information will be really useful for designing produced water treatment technologies that can be implemented, Nana said. Agbuji said another important aspect of doing this work is that a lot of the midstream oil and gas companies tend to want to use produced water or recycled produced water for hydraulic fracking. If we're able to find an appropriate treatment, at least that will be useful for that process. It would reduce the stress on freshwater use for fracking, so that would be a really good, important aspect to take care of, Agbuji said. Nana noted that being located in this area, the epicenter of the oil and gas industry, will help them collaborate with industry. And with the laboratory that we have here, this equipment is not just for the university. It's also an opportunity for the industry to collaborate with us and use it in testing the water. The technology that we develop will be a win-win both for the industry and for the Permian Basin community, and even beyond, because this technology will not be limited by geography. It can be applied across the various sectors and across various locations. So we are here, we are open for business, and we are here to help, Nana said. Agbuji said there is water research going on with a few companies. One of the common problems identified is pipes clogging, so they are working on how to identify what's in the water and eliminate items that are causing the clogging. Nana said UTPB is forming the UT Permian Basin Water Institute, similar to what he had at Purdue. This will be a multidisciplinary institute that will bring in expertise from engineering, sciences, social sciences, to look at water problems and develop an innovative solution for it. In fact, we are building a network, which is an innovative ecosystem that will comprise various universities that can help in addressing the challenges of produced water, Nana said. He said that will be launching soon, but I think it will be very beneficial from the university point of view, community, as well as industry. We're reaching out across the nation and beyond, wherever the expertise is, because we have the machine and we are sitting here in the Permian Basin area, so I think it will be attractive for people across the world. Ruth Campbell, Odessa American.
Death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 24th. Natividad Alvarado Calvillo, 61, died Sunday, March 22nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Estelita Q. Davila, 70, of Midland, died Sunday, March 22nd in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. March 27th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, March 26th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will be held following the service at American Heritage Cemetery. Michael Henry O'Donnell, Jr., 39, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 21st in El Paso. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Frederick Dean Webb, 92, of Midland, died Saturday, March 21st in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, March 21, 2020. Coronavirus in Midland. Healthcare. MMH. Coronavirus investigation ongoing for 3 or 4 patients. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. 3 or 4 people are persons under investigation for coronavirus at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to Dr. Larry Wilson, MMH Chief Medical Officer. Wilson said Friday during an afternoon press conference of Midland's Unified Command Team that the persons under investigation may not have the virus, but are behaving like they have it. We haven't found any other explanation yet, Wilson said. We're waiting on the test results on those patients. As for the man at Midland Memorial Hospital who tested positive for coronavirus, Wilson said he came to the hospital on March 14, and it took about 72 hours for results of his test to return. Wilson said Friday he expects results to come back quicker in the future, 24 to 48 hours. The patient who tested positive, identified previously as a man in his 60s, had traveled around the United States recently, as his profession requires that he travels, Wilson said. One of the states that he traveled to, according to Wilson, was Colorado, which MMH officials had previously said is among the states that patients are being asked about as part of the screening process. Of the persons under investigation, Wilson said they are predominantly people who would be considered to be community-acquired, except for one. Wilson said changes in procedures because of the coronavirus pandemic include the elimination of all elective surgeries. The hospital had decreased visitation to just one guest per patient and will change that to no visitors beginning today, unless it's an absolute imperative that the person be there and is a spokesperson for the individual in the hospital. Wilson said MMH has personal protective equipment from the standpoint of gowns and gloves, but there's a shortage of masks. Wilson and Mayor Patrick Peyton both made requests to oil companies that might have industrial-strength masks. The hospital also is working on the 6-8 nurse line, which Wilson said has been overloaded. Hospital officials are working on a different line for physicians to call. MISD update. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said Friday the district had served more than 20,000 meals before Friday. He also said organizations have stepped in to help deliver food on weekends. He said Governor Greg Abbott has put forward April 30 as the day when students might return to campuses around the state. Riddick said MISD staff will be prepared if that date is April 6 or April 30, and that on Monday, the district starts its academic enrichment plan. Packets will be offered to help with the enrichment process. The core classes, math, English, social studies, and science, will be emphasized. Riddick said parents need to put their children on a school day-like routine, the academic, health, exercise, and recess. Structure is important for when students eventually return to campus, he said. City. Don't worry if your water is going to come on. Mayor Patrick Peyton wants residents to know that the toilets will flush, the electricity will come on, and trash will be picked up. We're working with people and trying to get their bills paid, and I can say this to you, that if you're worried about your water bill, if you're worried about those things, just give us a call. Okay. And we're going to be working with you and helping take care of those things that you might need, Peyton said. That is our greatest concern at the council level and the city level right now. Coronavirus things to know. Coronavirus stats. As of 4:14 p.m. Friday, Texas, confirmed cases 194, deaths 5. Midland County, confirmed case 1, deaths 0, tested 47, negative cases 5. Permian Basin, 17 counties, confirmed cases 2, deaths 0. Source, MidlandHealth.org. MMH changes visitation policy. In order to prevent the spread of coronavirus and to protect patients, Midland Memorial Hospital has suspended all visitation effective 5 a.m. today, except for government personnel, adult family members of end-of-life patients who are actively dying, one coach or partner for labor and delivery patients, and one parent for pediatric patients. The only points of entry for the public will be the emergency department entrance and the Craddock Medical Office Building main entrance. MCPL reduces hours of operation. Midland County Public Library is reducing the hours of operation. Both branches will be closed today. Starting Monday, the libraries will be open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The new schedule will allow staff more time to clean and disinfect public spaces and materials. All public programming, notary services, computer usage, and printing and copying services are suspended until further notice. Meeting room reservations and bookmobile stops have been canceled through April 30. The Passport Acceptance Office will make every effort to keep scheduled appointments, but no new appointments will be made at this time. The library is also currently unable to accept and process any material, books, magazines, etc. donations. For updates, check the MCPL website and Facebook at Tall City Libraries. City offices, court, closed to the public. The City of Midland offices are closed to the public at least until April 3, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Also, Midland Municipal Court will be closed until April 3. Staff will still be available by phone during business hours during that time. For questions about court services, please call 685-7314. Residents can pay their water bill at www.midlandtexas.gov/427/pay-my-bill by calling the Customer Service Department 685-7320 or by using the drive-through window located on the east side of City Hall 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Monday through Friday or at any Mr. Payroll location. Officials are encouraging residents to sign up for the emergency alert system, Everbridge, by visiting MidlandTexas.gov, the City of Midland Facebook page, or by downloading the Everbridge app. Art Council postpones COA. The Arts Council of Midland is postponing the 37th Annual Celebration of the Arts that was scheduled for May 15 through 17 in downtown, Executive Director Danny Holeva said in a press release. All events and activities are suspended until a future date is determined. Until a new date is determined, all sponsorships and applications will be honored and transferred to the event later this year, he said. Financial institutions modify services. All Citibank locations will modify lobby access beginning today because of the coronavirus situation. Drive-through locations will remain open during regular business hours, while lobby access will be by appointment only until further notice, according to a press release from the bank. The Midland location is at 400 West Illinois Avenue. Customers must make an appointment in advance to visit a lobby location. All other bank activity will be directed to drive-through locations, ATMs, online or mobile devices. For more information, call 570-8679. First Basin Credit Union is restricting services in an effort to follow the recommendation of limiting groups to 10 people or fewer, according to a press release from the institution. Effective Monday, the branch at 3316 North Midland Drive will have regular lobby and drive-through hours. The branch at 5509 Andrews Highway will direct customers to the Midland Drive location, according to the release. Supreme Court suspends eviction action. The Supreme Court of Texas has issued an emergency order in connection with the coronavirus state of disaster. No action can be taken until April 19 regarding evictions, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. These actions include trial, hearing, or other proceeding or serving with a lawsuit for eviction. To view the document in its entirety, go to https://bit.ly/2QZ1OKJ. Oil prices. Crude falls below $20. By Mella McEwen. MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Crude oil fell below the $20 level for the first time since February 2002. The result of reports that Russia will increase its oil production, underscoring its commitment to its price war after Saudi Arabia. After the plunge in oil prices, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, "We are truly in unprecedented times. We have been working with the leadership of both states, as well as members of Congress. We are working with both the New Mexico Secretary of Energy, Sarah Probst, and Adrian Sandoval, Oil Conservation Division Director, discussing areas where they can be flexible with industry regarding operational issues during these times," he said. "We are also working with the Railroad Commission, and they understand the challenging times and will continue to regulate while being pragmatic about industry challenges." Shepard said the association sent letters to Governor Greg Abbott and New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, requesting that the oil and gas industry be included in any definition of critical industry should any further restrictions be required. On a side note, the PBPA is gathering masks and other items for the VA Medical Center in Big Spring to help ensure our heroes and those who care for them have necessary items, he said. The West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange sank $5.38, or about 21%, to close at $19.84 a barrel, giving back all the record gain prices from Thursday. Thursday, prices gained $4.85, or 24%, to hit $25.22 a barrel, as traders speculated President Donald Trump might intervene in the dispute between Russia and Saudi Arabia. Prices began the week at $28.70 a barrel, losing $3.03 for the day. Posted prices fell $2.75 to $19 per barrel. Natural gas was also lower for the week, losing a nickel to close at $1.604 per MCF, down from Monday's close of $1.815 per MCF. Energy. Apache laying off 85 workers in Midland. By Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Apache Corporation is laying off 85 employees in Midland in response to the oil crash. The Houston oil and gas producer told state workforce officials that its layoffs began Wednesday and will continue through May 18. The affected employees work at Apache's facility at 303 Veterans Air Park Lane. The move comes after Apache cut $650 million, or about a third, from its capital budget used to fund oil exploration and production. The company also cut its quarterly dividend by 90% to 2.5 cents per share, down from 25 cents. We are significantly reducing our planned rig count and well completions for the remainder of the year, and our capital spending plan will remain flexible based on market conditions, Apache Chief Executive John Christman IV said in a statement last week. U.S. oil and gas producers are slashing spending on new wells, furloughing and laying off workers after oil prices collapsed Wednesday into the $20 range. Apache and eight other of the most prolific shale drillers in the Permian Basin have cut $9.2 billion from their planned capital budget for this year, portending a sharp decline in drilling activity and layoffs. Apache reduced its 2020 capital budget to about $1.1 billion, down from about $1.75 billion. The company will idle all of its rigs in the Permian Basin of West Texas and reduce its drilling activity in Egypt and the North Sea. It expects to save $340 million in cash by reducing its dividend. Apache is the eighth most active driller in the Permian Basin, with 179 drilling permits in 2019. It is the 11th most active shale driller statewide. West Texas Intermediate crude is trading around $25 midday Friday, down more than 3%.
Do plasma donations wear on your body? Tour Good Health for Tuesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I know several people who donate plasma and get paid $500 per month if they donate two times per week. Wouldn't that be wearing on your body? Dr. Roach writes, you can't be paid to donate blood. Volunteer donors have the safest blood, so they are the only source of whole blood. Paid donors are only allowed to donate plasma, the proteins in blood, which can be thoroughly sterilized. Plasma proteins can be rapidly replaced, mostly by the liver, so some centers allow donation up to twice weekly through the American Red Cross, although the American Red Cross allows donation only once a month. Whole blood may be donated every 8 weeks, as replacing the cells and the iron that goes with them takes more time. Plasma donation is safe. The major risks are damage to the vein, irritation, or rarely damage to a nerve. A few people faint with any kind of a needle, even just seeing one.
This is Dear Abby for April 24th. couple's views on one issue diverge and threaten their future. Dear Abby, after an abusive relationship ended 14 years ago, I stayed single and raised my son to adulthood. I dated here and there, but never found anyone I had serious feelings for who also felt the same way about me until 7 months ago. My feelings for my boyfriend are strong, and it's mutual. He is giving, kind, caring, hardworking, and protective. We are very much in love. He tells me he feels like he can be himself around me, something he has never had before. I've never had anyone care so much about my well-being. We talk about everything and differ on only one point so far. I'm in education and an LGBTQ ally. He feels strongly nature dictates that only a man and a woman belong together, and he says he hates gay people. We both grew up in very small conservative communities. Now that my son is older, I plan to use my experiences to be a stronger voice on education issues regarding tolerance and improving learning outcomes for all by instilling conflict resolution principles in my educational practices. I'm not changing my view on this, but I want to continue for us to love and support each other. Should I tell my boyfriend I understand where he's coming from based on where and how we were raised? Do you think down the road our basic principles will drive us apart? We have been talking about buying a house in the country together, though neither of us has intentions of marriage anytime soon. Hesitating in Illinois. Dear Hesitating, you should absolutely talk to your boyfriend about your plan to become an outspoken LGBTQ ally and more active in your profession. When you become more visible, do you plan to separate your career and your personal life? It appears you're willing and able to respect him and understand why he feels the way he does, but is he willing to do the same for you? And will his conservative convictions negatively affect how you plan to live your life? It is very important that this issue be resolved before investing in real estate with him, as well as any more precious time. A professional mediator may be able to help with the conversation if you can't do this by yourselves. Dear Abby, my two grandchildren, 12 and 16, used to spend a lot of time with my husband and me, staying overnight and going on trips. As they have gotten older, I recognize they will naturally want to spend less time with us old folks. My problem is, when I send them texts to invite them for lunch or out somewhere for the day, they don't respond or just respond with an IDK. I don't know. My question, should I ask again to get an answer before the scheduled lunch or trip, or should I just forget it and assume they don't want to be involved with us? Sad Meemaw in Florida. Dear Sad, you have asked an intelligent question, but you're asking the wrong person. The people you should be asking are your grandchildren, and when you do ask them, it should be face to face.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.